Availability. Short supply motivates people to action. Nearly every year at Christmas, there's one toy that everyone has to have, and by the time they find out, it is always sold out. No matter, though, people will go to great extremes to get the desirable yet unavailable toy. They'll pay 10 times and sometimes 100 times the price just to get it. Another example of scarcity that we've all experienced is the auction. Items many times sell for as much as, or more, than they cost new because someone's afraid that they'll miss out on getting the product and the great deal that they want. For the masterful persuader, availability can be a very valuable tool in encouraging your prospects to take action right away. You should use availability in two ways. The first is to limit actual product availability. The second is to limit the number of products available at a specific price, or the number available with specific incentives for taking advantage of your offer immediately. A very interesting thing happens when you begin to control availability. You also create exclusivity. The person who is able to actually get your product, or get your product with all the add-on incentives, has something only a few others have. Another way of increasing desirability through controlling availability is through a sliding price strategy. If you purchase today, the price is $99. If you wait and purchase tomorrow, it goes up to $125, and if you wait until Friday, the price is $150. With each day that passes, there's more and more pressure to buy for those people who sit on the fence. Virtually every time I use this strategy, people will contact me after the last day with some excuse about why they were not able to get in, but should get the original price. They want the product, but they waited too long. Usually I won't give it to them at the lower price because I want them to make a more rapid decision next time I make the offer. If they have a legitimate reason that they could not take advantage of the offer, and I have products left, then I may consider giving them the lower price. The problem with limiting availability and then giving a lower price to someone who did not take advantage in a timely manner is that you condition them not to take advantage. They know they can come back and get it later at the same price. Many internet marketers make the mistake of having a sale, then extending a sale, and then offering the lower price to anyone who asks for it. This is simply a recipe for never getting your desired profit margin and for creating bad customers. Discounting is technically limiting the availability of a price. You must be careful when discounting not to condition people to think it will always be there, or the technique backfires. One of the nation's largest craft stores does this every Sunday. You can look in the Sunday paper in any town that this chain is in, and there's always a coupon for 40% off one item. There is no reason to ever pay full price for anything in the store, especially not large purchases. I understand the argument about the people who will come in and get 40% off but spend a lot more, and when they do, it's great. I prefer to condition my buyers differently. I would give the discount to the preferred customers who I know will stay with me based on their buying habits and reward them for their loyalty. Customers who regularly respond to percent off deals do so with your competitors too. Availability also applies to building your persona. Limiting access to yourself and even the information about how to reach you personally creates exclusivity and a stronger sense of urgency to reach you and do business when the opportunity presents itself. It's vitally important that you not use this technique as a means of avoiding the people you should be talking to. It is simply a way of reinforcing the idea that you are busy and in demand. Professionals worth their fees are not easy to get to. They are too busy helping their loyal clients. One strategy is to control your appointment calendar. Be sure you tell your receptionist who you will always take calls from and which times during the day you'll be available to talk. It is important to carefully script what you want your receptionist to say as well. You want the message to be, "The only time available on John's calendar today is at 3:45 p.m. I can fit you in for 15 minutes then for an initial call. Will that work for you?" There's great urgency to get the spot on the calendar. Always have your receptionist give the caller one option for today if you're available and one for the following day or the next day you're available. Right now, I know some of you are saying, "I don't have a receptionist. I answer my own calls." Stop right now and get one. You can hire an answering service or receptionist service online for pennies a day. A lot of executives will tell you that they answer their own phones, and they do. The only people who have their direct lines are the people who they have already made feel exclusive by giving them a direct line. If you absolutely insist on answering your own phone, follow the same process. Set a time later in the day or the following one to get on your calendar. Whether you're creating a fanatical cult or a cult of customers, exclusivity and availability are the keys to your success. Customers want a payoff, they want to be on the inside track, and they want to be rewarded for their uniqueness and quick action. When I was growing up in a cult, the reward was access to heaven and everlasting life. Equally powerful was the opportunity to speak with or spend time with our minister. Once you spent some time with him, you were special, you were on the inside, and exclusive. From that point on, believing him was easy. It was also the ability to be separate from a world that was believed to be on its way to hell. Availability was very limited, too. If I did not choose now, there was every likelihood that tomorrow would be too late. What is it that you can give your customers that they can form around and believe in? Find that and let in those customers who want in. Don't worry, the group will grow because those who belong will be the missionaries who recruit others to be just like them. And you already know how much easier it is to persuade once the transfer of power and credibility has occurred. Chapter Review. The more exclusive you can make someone feel, the more likely they are to be persuaded. Exclusive groups are easier to persuade than generic groups. Exclusivity is one of the keys to building a cult, whether a cult of customers or of brands. Exclusivity is closely tied to identity. Reinforce the tie between people's identities and the exclusivity, and you move them much more quickly and easily to your point of view. Success questions. Who in my sphere of influence, customer base, or prospect base should I make exclusive? What can I create that will get people to identify themselves as belonging? For example, a newsletter list or a special edition club. What exclusive groups do I already belong to that I can share access to with people I want to persuade? Chapter 10, Curiosity. The first and simplest emotion, which we discover in the human mind, is curiosity. Edmund Burke. Curiosity killed the cat, but satisfaction brought it back. Eugene O'Neill. In terms of persuasive emotions, curiosity is king. Most sales and persuasion books will tell you pain and pleasure are key emotions, but that's only partially right. You cannot move in either direction until you're first curious if there is a lower low or a higher high. Curiosity is the first emotion that we learn. It is the basis on which all of our current knowledge and experience is built. Curiosity is the impetus to change. Many times, the reason that people are not persuaded is that they're not first made properly curious. Understand, there is no reason for people to change a current opinion of anything until they become curious about what other options might exist. Questions are one of the best tools for creating high levels of curiosity. Questions also allow you to lead people to the conclusions you desire. If you want to deeply persuade people, you must first find out what they're curious about. What would make them even consider that their opinion could be wrong or not efficient? More importantly, how will they know when they've made a good decision? By just knowing these two things, you'll put yourself ahead of your competition. One of the first questions I ask when I'm persuading is some version of the question, how will you define success, or how will you know? Everyone has an outcome that he must have in any decision he will make. The majority of people who will not make decisions do not because they have no idea how they will know when they've achieved success. The really interesting thing about this question is that it makes people intensely curious because they've rarely considered the answer. The gap where they have to think requires that they become curious. They have to ask themselves questions and find answers. For you, this is the perfect time to bring up new ideas because they're already in a curious state of mind. I cannot stress enough how important it is for you to get anyone you ever persuade to define how he or she will know when. How do you know gets to the core of the criteria that people have for the product, service, or even idea that they have. When you can get people to describe exactly what they want, you're halfway to how will you know when. The second part of the process is getting them to tell you how they will know their decision was the right one. It is important that you understand how they will know that they made the right decision, so you can be sure the solution you are leading them to is the one they'll stay persuaded about. There are many ways to create and enhance curiosity. Making provocative statements that require questions begins moving the person you're persuading to be curious. Provocative statements can include very surprising facts or assumptions about the product, service, or concept you're discussing. Often, by making a startling statement, you force people into thinking about your topic in a new way. If you help someone create a new way of thinking, curiosity and questions are inevitable. Statements that require questions, again, put people in a position of needing to have more information. And if you've positioned yourself well, you will be their primary source of information. Detailed information can also cause intense curiosity. When we're confronted with new information that we don't understand, we must investigate and decide. During the time when our minds are open, we're most susceptible to change. In those moments, it is time to create a new level of curiosity about old beliefs and new solutions. Direct questioning of assumptions and beliefs is a very effective technique for creating a high level of curiosity. In order to question assumptions appropriately, you must use a reasonable amount of tact. There is a significant difference between questioning an assumption and challenging it. Challenges tend to be more confrontational in nature and put people on the defensive. Direct questioning, on the other hand, encourages people to open up and explain their ideas or beliefs. When they open up, it gives you the opportunity to ask more penetrating questions designed to get them to reconsider and perhaps question their position. Many people, when directly questioned, will admit to not knowing exactly why they believe something, or will admit to holding a conviction that is that of their parents or spouse. Only through direct questioning can you appear to be genuine in your desire to learn while gathering valuable information you can use to persuade. You also have the opportunity, by the direction of your questions, to bring them to your point of view or predetermined conclusion. Leaving important pieces of information out of your story but alluding to them is another way of creating curiosity. Leaving information out but alluding to it or giving information and then suggesting outright that we'll give them additional information is a variation on the direct questioning technique. When we give only partial information, we let people fill in the blanks. It is important to test if you allow them to fill in the blanks to be sure that they've filled in the blank correctly. If they have not, or if they do not get curious and ask you more questions, you must go back and give them the information so that they do not leave without the full story. The idea of omission is only to make them think and query. In Chapter 5 on Storytelling, I use this exact technique to make you intensely curious. Let me give you a special password that gets people curious right away. Simply ask them what they're curious about. Be sure to use the word curious because it immediately requires them to become curious when they have to ponder what they're curious about. I often ask the question, "What is the one thing that you're really curious about in relation to this product or service?" If we were face to face right now, I would ask you the question, "What is it about persuasion that you're most curious about?" Then I would wait for your answer. Once you gave me the answer, I would ask you if there was anything else. That simple follow-on question again moves you back into an internal questioning process and will many times uncover more information. One of the keys to building an effective cult is to have all of the answers. It's very easy to appear to have all the answers when you direct the questions and the curiosity. When you've established yourself as an expert, you have great opportunity to direct the questions. Ideally, you'll ask the kind of questions that can only be answered affirmatively by your product or service. In a cult, many of those questions require intense thought and study. Of course, if you control the questions, it is also very easy to control the answers and the resources by which someone could find the answer. Ultimately, in a cult, anything that cannot be explained requires faith. In business or personal relationships, anything that cannot be explained requires further study. The more study that is required, the more opportunity you have to direct the discovery. Why? Well, the answer is very simple. People are very limited on time and want to be led. They like to be curious for a moment, but they want instant satisfaction. That desire for satisfaction allows them to hang on to the first solution that makes sense to them. One of the best ways to see how curiosity works is in the relationship between a man and a woman. If you ever want to date another person, simply make him or her curious. People have an innate desire to learn about someone that they see as an enigma. It's nearly impossible for them not to try and unpeel the layers just to see if their curiosity can be satisfied. If you do nothing during their discovery process, they'll discover just what they need to make a decision. But if you make them curious, give them clues and some satisfaction while replacing it with more mystery, you create more desire to know. The more time people spend with you and pondering you, the more familiar you become. Rather than seeing you as a person who is pursuing them, they become the seeker of knowledge, and when they're curious, they're susceptible to persuasion. Cultists and serial manipulators know this, and they prey on it. They make discovery of the truth easy, but only through a process that brings you deeper and deeper into their grips. They allow you to question in the beginning, and they give you the answers you need, but eventually, as you become more comfortable, you stop questioning and start relating. At that point, they've accomplished exactly what they desired. In order to back out, you have to start reevaluating your decisions, and unless you're intensely curious, you do not restart the questioning process. One important thing to remember is that curiosity for the sake of curiosity can delay decisions. Be sure when you initiate curiosity that you have a plan that will lead the person that you're persuading to the information you want her to discover and to the decisions you want her to make. The purpose of curiosity for the persuader is to crack the tough shell of belief and reverse unthinking tradition. Chapter Review. Create curiosity whenever you can. Curiosity is the oil that greases the wheels of change. To create curiosity, ask good questions. Directly question assumptions and beliefs. Remember that when people are curious, change is possible. The purpose of curiosity is for you to direct the discovery of new information that will help others make the only logical decision they can, and the one you want them to make. Success questions. What questions can I ask that will make my prospects intensely curious? What do the majority of prospects not know or understand that if they did, would make them draw a new conclusion? What information can I leave out that will cause my prospects to ask good questions? What information can I allude to that will cause them to draw the direct conclusion required to fill in the blanks? Chapter 11. Relevancy. Your pitch or idea had better be immediately relevant to me, or I'll destroy you with apathy. Dave Lacani. A common reason that people are not persuaded by what you have to say is that it's not relevant and does not apply to them. One quick look at your mailbox will reveal any number of offers that are directed to you because you appear to meet a certain criteria. The real problem is that they are in no way relevant to you. The problem is made worse by the amount of unwanted email or spam that we receive on a daily basis. Relevancy is all about providing me with information I need now based on my own revealed needs and desires. Relevancy goes much deeper when speaking of persuasion. It also applies to the kinds of messages we send. You have to ask yourself how I see myself in order to know what is relevant to me. You also need to adjust your persona, whether in person or via any advertising outlet, to appeal to me specifically. Relevancy also means that you have taken the time to get to know me, to understand me as an individual or as a specific group, so that you can serve me better. It means you understand what is important to me in my life, in my job, in my free time, in my most private moments. It also means you understand my timing and know when your offer or idea will be most applicable to me. It does not necessarily mean that you know me personally, but you've studied me by studying many others like me. You ask questions more often than you provide information, and when you do provide information, it's tailored to my needs specifically. You can nearly read my mind because you understand as well as I do what I need and what I will get out of the relationship with someone like you. Once you have done that, you have begun to become relevant to me. There is a very short path between your relevancy and our mutually beneficial relationship. A recent study done by Yankovic Partners as reported at the American Association of Advertising Agencies by J. Walker Smith, April 15, 2004, at the American Association of Advertising Agencies Conference in Miami, Florida, showed that 59% of people surveyed felt that most marketing and advertising has little relevancy to them. Additionally, the survey revealed that 33% would be willing to have a slightly lower standard of living to live in a society without marketing and advertising. It is insane, if not bordering on criminal, to think that you can persuade anyone of anything they have no interest in. Unfortunately, we often attempt that on a daily basis. The old idea that sales and persuasion is a numbers game is still so predominant that a significant amount of marketing falls on deaf ears. The real problem is not that your attempts are falling on deaf ears, but that people hear you, and each piece of irrelevant information is another straw on the camel's back that eventually causes it to break. The result is that people become not just defensive, but also apathetic. The best way to not be persuaded is to be apathetic about whatever another person is talking to you about. Apathy takes a long time to build, but it takes an even longer time to turn around. If you hope to persuade one single person or a stadium full of people, you must be sure that the information you're sharing is relevant to their needs and desires. Pay careful attention to what I said, relevant to their needs and desires. Each person you speak to will have different needs and desires. It is up to you to identify what those are specifically so that you can address them. You also need to be sure that you're targeting the right person with your persuasive message or argument. There is no value at all in trying to persuade anyone of anything in which she has no interest. There is no product, service, or argument that applies to everyone universally, and even if it did, each person or group would have their own specific needs and desires that would need to be addressed to make it appropriate for them. The very best question you can ask yourself is this: what makes this person a good match for my message? By answering that simple question, you'll improve your odds of finding exactly the right person or people for your message. The most repulsive person I ever worked for managed a large technology consulting firm. On top of being wildly dishonest and unethical, he thought virtually every person he or we talked to should switch their business to his company or should open their Rolodex to us. Even when he was not a match in expertise, he would encourage his sales teams to present other services that were in no way related to the prospect's current needs during presentations that were highly relevant to their needs. He would stand in the room and at the end of a presentation start quizzing everyone in the room about who they knew who could help him find more prospects in certain lines of business. In addition to the timing being horrible, most of the people in the room could not care less about his needs. Those people had one specific agenda, and it did not involve giving him more business. It would be a little like going to your doctor and having him ask you before he goes if you know anyone who's going to be buying a car soon because he also sells cars. All credibility is destroyed. It was a perfect example of how failing to be relevant can destroy opportunities to win business. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting that you should not ask for leads, but there's a time and a place for it. Asking for leads is part of the sales process. The timing of the request for leads comes when there's been a successful conclusion of business. The other time is when the person you're asking has decided not to do business with you for reasons other than some inability to perform on your part. When you're looking at a group of people you want to persuade, ask these questions. Have these people demonstrated a desire or a need for my product or service? Do these people have a need for my product but don't recognize it? Do they remain unaware a problem exists? Is my product relevant in terms of their desires, financially and experientially? If you're trying to be relevant to a group of people, have you gathered the right group of people? Will at least half of them have knowledge, experience, or problems similar to the specific ones that your product, service, or idea can address? Have you carefully qualified your list before you start calling on people for any reason? No longer are generalizations enough. For example, 40-plus-year-old males, income $70,000-plus per year, owns a sports car. You must be much more specific. For example, 35 to 45-year-old male, income of $100,000 minimum, drives a Porsche Boxster or BMW Z3, buys suits at least once a month. The more you know about the prospect, the more likely you are to be relevant. At the end of the day, if you can clearly identify me, you have a high likelihood of being able to craft a presentation or idea that is relevant to me. The final step is being sure that you're relevant to me. If your persona and style do not match my criteria for relevancy in a person I would trust, listen to, buy from, or have a relationship with, you become irrelevant. Once you become irrelevant, you don't get a second chance with me. When you set out to persuade, be sure that you understand what expectations exist in your potential client. Ask them what they expect if you don't know. There's no better way to become relevant than by asking better questions of the person you hope to influence. Relevancy starts with concern. If I feel you are concerned about me and my needs, you are more relevant to me than someone who just wants a few minutes of my time to see if I might have a need for their services. Be relevant or be gone. Chapter review. When unqualified, more than half of the people you attempt to persuade will feel that what you have to say is not relevant to them. Relevancy and familiarity are closely linked. If you are relevant to me, it's because you know something about me, and the more you know about me, the more familiar you feel. Spend your time carefully selecting whom you will persuade or to whom you will send your message. It is a little like the old carpenter's adage, measure twice, cut once. Be sure your persona, style, and presentation match me, my lifestyle, my business, or my personality, and you'll become instantly more relevant. Success questions. What am I currently doing to ensure that my message is going to the right person or group? What are the most important issues guaranteed to be facing my audience? How can I become more knowledgeable of those I hope to persuade? What can I do to develop niche groups in the masses I'm currently working with and become intensely relevant to them?